Are you someone who loves Christmas? To the point that you really hate to take the decorations down, even if it is January 15th? If you answer yes, you are a Noelophile. And so am I. And this show is for you. Hi, I'm Dot Cannon, also known as Noella Noelophile. And welcome to my Noelophile podcast. On this show, we're going to be talking about Christmas in general and California Christmas in particular.
We are going to start with a couple of songs from our new album, Lokahi. The first piece is a choral, and it's called Pule no Malia. Pule in Hawaiian means prayer, and Malia means Mary, prayer for Mary. Bringing everyone together, and we're working towards a common goal. It's music, and it's fun, and it's sharing our joy and our culture.
An incredible free concert is happening in Los Angeles on Christmas Eve, and you're invited. You can attend either in person or virtually. The 65th annual LA County Holiday Celebration at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion showcases the cultures that make up Los Angeles through a wide spectrum of local performing artists and groups as they take the stage for a three-hour spectacular. Among the 28 Los Angeles-based performing artists and groups who are going to be on stage is six-time Grammy Award-winning musician Daniel Ho. Daniel is a multi-instrumentalist and educator whose areas of expertise include composing, arranging, producing, audio engineering, singing, ukulele, and slack key guitar. And he's going to be performing with award-winning hula performance troupe Halau Hula Kali'i O Nalani. Daniel, what do you remember very best about your growing up years that enabled you to become one of the most prolific and most successful musicians Hawaii has ever produced?
Well, I don't know if that's entirely true, but I remember being introduced to music by my mom. I was 3 or 4 before kindergarten, and she had a little toy piano, a red one, like Schroeder in Peanuts. And I learned how to play Mary Had a Little Lamb. And, you know, my dad had an organ in the house. My mom and dad both played organ. And that was my first instrument in second grade. And then I went on to ukulele and other things and just really took a liking to it. My brother also took music lessons and didn't like it at all and became a science guy and took all the science classes and became an electrical engineer.
But for you, it was from Mary Had a Little Lamb on a Red Piano to fast forward today, 6 Grammy nominations, or 6 Grammys, I beg your pardon, 12 Grammy nominations, and working with this incredible hula troupe, which I hope I'm going to say their name right, Halau Hula Kali'i O Nalani, is that correct?
Yes, it's pretty hard to pronounce even for me. It's Halau Hula Kali'i O Nalani. And they've been around in Southern California for 34 years. And Kali'i Sabalos is their director. And his mom is Nalani. And she had the hula troupe before him. And they've just done wonderful things, performed everywhere. And Kumu Kealii, Kumu means teacher in Hawaiian. He has a couple of Grammy nominations for a live show, Live at the Getty Center. And another one we did at East West Players Theater in downtown LA. So yeah, we've been working together for 15 years or so.
In fact, I believe that you work with them on your most recently produced album.
Yes, we just released an album in August called Lokahi, Colors in Harmony. And actually, the song Colors in Harmony that is on the album is from Holiday Celebration 2020 during the pandemic. And I would say that's probably one of the most memorable holiday celebrations that I've done because it was during the pandemic and pre-vaccine, and we did it by video. So Holiday Celebration and CDK Productions, Ken Shapiro, and PBS SoCal did a video presentation, and they, you know, we went to the beach in San Pedro and Malibu and all these areas and filmed a music video, which ignited my passion for filming.
In fact, I saw on your website that you had not done music videos prior to the pandemic.
Yes. Oh, I just love it because, like sound, they're waveforms, you know, and sound and light, it's kind of the same thing. You have sharp, you have bouquet, and You know, we have dry music and we have wet and we have pan left and right and framing and, you know, everything's relatable between the two. So kind of similar principles apply. But I call what I do reverse film scoring, because unlike scoring a film where you put music to support the emotions in the scenes in the film, I score my music. So I write the song, then I think about, wow, how do I want to present this? How do I want it to look? And how do I want people to feel? And sort of do it the other way.
I promise you we'll get talking about the concert in just a minute, but you've used a term I hadn't heard before. You said we have dry music and we have wet, and I don't know what that means.
Oh, yes. Dry, it's kind of a term we use in audio engineering. Dry means there's no ambience. So wet would mean, imagine yourself in the back of a church listening to a priest talk, you know, way up front at the altar, and you hear all this echo and all the reflections from the church and the floor and the ceilings and stained glass windows. And then by the time it gets to you, you have no idea what he said.
You just taught me something brand new.
Yeah, dry would be, you know, 6 inches in front of your face. We put a couple of microphones in front of a vocal or guitar or something. And there's the dry signal, meaning the signal that comes from my mouth or from the instrument relative to the ambience and reflections that happen around in the room is, you know, pretty drastic. So you don't really hear any of the ambience. And that's dry.
Thank you. I didn't know what in the world you were talking about when you first said that. Suppose right now we were to go forward in our imagination to the 24th of December around 3 o'clock at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and you're on stage with the Hello. What are we going to see from you and from them?
Well, we are going to start with a couple of songs from our new album, Lo Kahi. The first piece is a choral, like Bach-like choral piece with Dave Grusin-esque piano under it. And it's called Pule no Malia. Pule in Hawaiian means prayer, and Malia means Mary, prayer for Mary. And the second song is Kaimana, Power of the Ocean. And it talks about unity between people. And we're going to close with a familiar classic, Mele Kalikimaka, that, you know, everyone from Bette Midler to Bing Crosby have recorded.
How much fun does that sound to you? In one of the interviews you did, you're quoted as saying, I always search for something unique. What have you found that's unique that you're going to be using as a musician who keeps growing and learning when you take the stage at the Dorothy Chandler?
Well, what's unique about what we do is Kumu Keli'i does all original choreographies to these pieces. Mele Kalikimaka was actually choreographed by his mother. So that's what they dance. But the other pieces, he's creating new movements and staging. You know, we're also including, you know, this person enters here and the spotlight goes there. So we're trying to think it through as much as possible. So it's more than just a hula, but more of a performance. I think the combination of elements is unique. So as I mentioned, Pule no Malia is hymn-like because Bach, you know, my favorite class in music school was 18th century harmony. I love the way Bach voice leads and the counterpoint and all the voices that are happening. Kaimana is primarily a Polynesian vocal piece with percussion and no instruments. So, you know, and more rhythmic. And so, you know, they're completely different styles. And I search for uniqueness, not purely, but my idea is to use traditions and put traditions together, like an Indian polyrhythm and a partito alto Latin rhythm, and come up with a song in an odd meter that's a samba or something like that. So I try to draw from traditions, and that's what we'll be presenting.
What I found fun about the halau is that they bring ancient hula traditions and they're very forward thinking at the same time. What are we going to see in the way of hula traditions when they're on stage with you?
Wow, that's amazing to think that Kumu Keli'i is very open-minded. So a lot of times traditionalists, you can find this not just in dance, but in music as well, don't pay much attention to a progressive thinking or something unique or creative and things like that. And sometimes there's a divide I've noticed, like a traditionalist, like, oh, you can't do that. That's, you know, this is the way it's always been done. And then you have the creative. I would be on the other side of the fence where I'm like, I want to do something that's never been done before. But what Kumu Kili'i does is his halau, their hula is rooted in tradition, the fundamentals, kahiko, chanting, things like that. And what they'll be wearing is traditional, but he's adding, you know, onto the costume color with new fabrics and things like that. And so he's combining kukui, which is a nut lei that we wear in Hawaii, but different colors, you know, so it's amazing. And he can do everything in that he's like a national champion ballroom dancer. He teaches world music, global motion at Santa Monica College. So he can take different styles of dance and combine it with hula. And he's an incredible vocalist. So, you know, the talent of his group, it's kind of, I don't know, there's no end to what they can do. So it's different. It's not just traditional, and it's not just wildly creative and avant-garde either. It's rooted in tradition, but unique to their halau.
This is going to be a not-to-be-missed performance. We should mention that if people can come to the Dorothy Chandler, they do need reservations. And if they cannot, for whatever reason, come down there, this is also going to be live broadcast on PBS and on the website. What's some of the work involved between now and then, before the 24th?
We've been doing a lot of rehearsing. So a few times a week, we've been practicing with the group. Transitions between songs have to be paid attention to, how we engage the audience when we're dancing for ourselves, you know, lighting, thinking through as many details as possible, because we're on stage for 4 minutes and 20 seconds. So the crew has to transition, you know, the clip-on six headsets and, you know, the bass and the percussion and the piano, and where is everything going to be? How are they going to roll it on and off? They have a lot to think about on the technical side. So we try to have as much costumes and everything like that. Sewing, they're doing a lot of sewing, getting the kukui lei from downtown LA, you know, and there's a lot of preparation in addition to, you know, everyone has day jobs as well. And I'm mixing an album and we're doing shows at Disneyland, you know, leading up until then. So just have a lot going on, but it keeps life interesting, I guess.
Let's do a shameless plug of some of the other things you're doing right now, specifically looking forward to 2025. The troupe, I believe, is going to be doing a pretty large performance after the first of the year, and I'm curious what's coming up for you as well.
Well, let's see. I have a new album coming out next year that I'm quite excited about. It's a Mexican guitarist that I'm collaborating with, ukulele and guitar. And that's coming out in June. We are still performing, you know, Lokahi, our album and songs from that. We're doing some big shows at Disneyland of California Adventure Park, actually, at the Hollywood Backlot stage with a 15-person ensemble. Songs from our album as well as holiday songs. And we have a State Department tour as cultural ambassadors in Hong Kong and Micronesia. So we've been doing a lot of work for the State Department as well, which has been a wonderful cultural exchange and an opportunity to learn and to visit places that we've probably would never see, like Greenland last year or Brunei. And we're just in Brazil this year. So yeah, we try to do different things and always continue to learn. And it helps us evolve as artists.
People are going to want to know the dates of your Disneyland performances.
DanielHo.com. I have a calendar of events and they're all listed there. And it's through January 5th we'll be performing there two or three times a week.
That's DanielHo.com. And looking ahead to some of Daniel's additional performances in the new year.
You know, I forgot to mention, my wife Lydia just made a note for me. I'm doing the Orange County Ukulele Festival in March. So there's an ukulele festival down there that Victoria Vox puts on. And then in April, going to Allegheny Ukulele Festival. And in May, at Swallow Hill in Denver. So I just wanted to mention that real quick. Sorry for the sidebar.
That's perfectly fine. I'm going to add a sidebar here because I'd be doing you a real disservice if I didn't mention that the ukulele you're playing is something you co-designed.
Yes. Oh, well, this is one thing that I'm really grateful for in my life. You know, the opportunity to design an instrument, because going back to the lecture part of it, I just did a class at UCLA about this last week for Global Pop, seeing a note through from beginning to end. So what does that mean? Well, it starts with composition. It starts with deciding what the note is and then how you want to present it. Are you going to play it? On what instrument? Are you going to sing it? And then how are you going to capture it, recording it? What kind of microphones? Dynamic microphones, condenser microphones, large diaphragm, small diaphragm, and record it, mix it, master it. How do you frame it, which is the artwork, the graphic design, taking the photos, what colors are you going to use? Blue is America's favorite color. And then how do you promote it and sell it? Music videos, social media, website, and so on. So that's seeing a note through from beginning to end. 13 years ago, I met Pepe Romero Jr., who is a world-class classical guitar luthier. His father is Pepe Romero Sr., who I've been a fan of since I was 9 years old because I studied classical guitar back in Hawaii for 5 years and idolized him and got a chance to record an album with him called Aloha España, which is classical guitar and ukulele duets. And that was the highlight of my career, I must say. But Pepe's son builds guitars that Paco de Lucia, Jack Johnson, just the highest end stuff. I had an idea, because I've been playing ukulele my whole life, to take all the qualities that make an ukulele wonderful and take it a step further. And we came up with an instrument called a tiny tenor, which is a full tenor ukulele that's the size of a concert. And we use a lute body, and for even resonance, there's a lot to explain, but the tiny tenor took off. 12 years ago, Pepe started Romero Creations, which is a company that he had to make to fill all the orders for the tiny tenors. And then from there, we have 12 variations of this concept in guitar form and six string and ukulele and sopranino ukuleles that are unique, entirely unique. And for me, instrument design, I also have percussion instruments like shaker leles and bongo lele, which is a bongo cajon shaped like an ukulele. But instrument design to me is like writing a song with wood. And you actually start from the tree, not composition. So between the tree and composition is the instrument. So you can choose spruce wood, Brazilian rosewood back and sides, or phoenix wood, or mahogany. Decide on the tone, decide on the shape, decide on the bracing, the size of the sound hole, what kind of tuners, what kind of strings, to come up with an instrument that sounds a certain way. And these instruments, the tiny tenor line and of instruments that we do with Romero Creations and Pepe Romero, is entirely unique. And as an artist, going back to what we talked about earlier, uniqueness is key. Because you're always striving to sound like yourself rather than one of the many. So that was really a gift and something that I'm so lucky to be able to do at this stage in my career, you know, fourth quarter.
Just this year, this stage of Daniel's career has included another innovation.
I just released an instrument this year called an ekolu. An ekolu in Hawaiian means three. And this, long story short, this idea came about in 2015 when we were in Mongolia working with Mongolian tribes doing a collaboration album in Hulunbuir, which is like 26 miles from the Russian border. And they were playing traditional instruments called Doshpulur, Tavushur, and they're three-string instruments. And I had my tiny tenor ukulele and playing. It's like, oh, we're only playing triads. Why do I need four strings? I'm always doubling a string. And it makes it kind of harder to do. So I came home, took off a string, and I started recording all the strumming parts on my albums with three strings. And I asked Pepe, can we make a three-string ukulele? And he's like, I don't get it. I have no idea what you're talking about or why you'd want to do that. But if you want to do it, we can do it. And that's a big deal, you know, for him to trust me. I said, you know, I kind of explained the music theory behind it and the concepts, and he made it, and it came out in January of this year. And then I just recently last week finished a curriculum called Ukulele at School for the Ikolu, adapted it for the Ikolu. It was a one-year elementary school program that Steve Sano, who's a professor of music at Stanford University, and I wrote many years ago for four-string ukulele. So schools use it for four-string, but the three-string ukulele is considerably easier to play than an ukulele. Strumming and singing, it has the same range because the reentrant tuning on an ukulele is G, C, E, A, and the high G, C is the lowest note. So it still has C, E, and A. It has the same range, sounds the same, but it's considerably easier to play. So I'm really excited to share this instrument and get the word out about it as an introduction to the joy of making music.
What if a teacher's listening and thinking, how do I find out about this? Is that on your website?
Yes, danielho.com and romerocreations.com.
Again, that's danielho.com and romerocreations.com to find out more about the Ikolu.
A quote that you have recently was where you said that a life is a composition. You're teaching, I think, a class at UCLA. Within the next 5 years, what do you want to compose next?
You know, honestly, that's a great question. I can't believe it. So I've been thinking about this. I want to put the songs together that I have in two forms, and maybe they could even be one form. One thing is a musical, and that thought came to mind because these Disney shows that we're doing, I actually had to script the story because we have to do, you know, 30 seconds of talking, minute and a half a song, and then talking, and then have different cast, different parts of the stage, and kind of have a storyline to that string. I thought, oh, you know, this kind of works. So I think I can do this. And I have a lot of original songs that are basically just life experiences over the last 30-something, 40-something years I've been writing music. So I want to do something like that. But I also want to write everything down in book form. So when I croak, there'll still be, you know, someone wants to, what chord is he playing in the chorus of Peace of the Ocean or something? Everything's written down. The guitar part, the tuning, the melody, the words. So I want to get through all the songs and do that. And then I want to orchestrate everything for symphony because, you know, I studied composition and film scoring at the Grove School of Music way back when in the 80s. And it's something I've always wanted to do. I have, you know, maybe one chord, 20% of my, 10% of my repertoire already orchestrated, like Ocean Dance, but a lot of it isn't. And I think it'd be fun to perform a show with a symphony at the Sydney Opera House.
That does sound like a blast. Looking at your website, danielho.com, I had the pleasure of hearing your Ocean Dance, which I confess is my favorite. And you gave me chills on Carry You Forward. What's the creative process like for you when you're going to write a piece of music like Ocean Dance?
To do something that's never been done before. So that I'm so happy. I mean, that you chose that piece out of all the other ones, it tells me a lot about who you are and what you're interested in because of the kind of music it is. Well, on a piano, people often usually play scales. Scales meaning a linear passage, da 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 da. You know, that song doesn't have any. So it's based, the theme is an interval of a fifth. And so all the chords are formed with fifths moving in contrary motion, in oblique motion, and they're forming chords, but the interval is really the fifth, and you can hear it throughout. And the idea behind that was to try to create a piece using chordal harmonies and that aren't really used on piano and also not using a scale. If you listen to da 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 Mozart and everything you Bach, you always hear scales. And so that was an attempt to treat the piano as something different. So that was my idea behind it. And also to score the power of the ocean. There's so much music written about how beautiful and warming and healing the ocean is, but it can also sink a ship. So I wanted to, you know, kind of feature that part of the sea.
I personally love that because I could close my eyes and listen and I could see the intensity building and I could see it kind of calming down and coming back. If this is the eighth time you will have been at the LA County Holiday Celebration, what's one of your absolute favorite memories from being there?
I think, you know, it's the camaraderie of the group. We always perform with quite a big group, you know, 20 to 25 people or so. This time, I think we're doing 30 and 40, 40 people. Bringing everyone together, and we're working towards a common goal. And it's music, and it's fun, and it's sharing our joy and our culture with everyone. But a lot goes into doing it, you know, from sewing to getting together and rehearsing a bunch of times. And it culminates in the performance. And it's, you know, I get a little nervous, of course, hoping everything goes well because it's live TV. So you only have one shot to get it right. And I do enjoy that excitement. Not all the time, because I'd probably have a heart attack, but once in a while it's okay.
I'm wondering if there's such a thing as a musician or a performer on the planet that doesn't get nervous. In your experience, is there?
Yes. That's a great question. Insightful question. So nervousness, for personally speaking, it happens when I don't feel prepared. And, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know if I can get through the end of this song. For instance, Ocean Dance, performing Ocean Dance, it's so hard because the arpeggios are not triads and they're not scales. They're fifths going up and down on the piano, which is a very unusual hand motion. And I've been practicing this piece since 2017, and I do not have the confidence to know without a doubt that I can play it perfectly in front of people. And I've tried it a few times performing it, and I get nervous because it's that difficult for me to execute. An easy song, for example, I don't know if James Taylor gets nervous because he plays songs. I mean, I'm such a huge James Taylor fan, but he plays, you know, Fire and Rain, Mill Worker, and Carolina on My Mind. And he knows it like the back of his hand. And when he plays it and sings it, he's just engaging his audience and telling a story. And he does it for them. I don't think he's thinking so much about, oh, how do I look or anything like that. It's more about, you know, giving music. It doesn't look like he gets nervous at all. And I think even for myself, if I'm playing a simple song like Pineapple Mango, it's got three chords and I'm just kind of singing, I actually don't get nervous for those kinds of things. So that's a very long answer.
Well, I think it's a very reassuring answer for anybody that's ever performed music or in any way, shape, or form performed in public.
Yeah, preparation is key. And I always play the entire show the day of the show. I don't do it a whole bunch of times and tire out my hands, but that way I know when I'm on stage, like, oh, I already just did this, you know, perfectly in the hotel room, you know, earlier today. So then it reduces the nervousness.
I had wondered too, since you've taught workshops pretty much all over the world, what you like to teach your students, especially about music performance and about life in general.
That's a great question. Music has made me happy throughout my life. It's lifted me when I was sad and makes me happier when I'm happy. It's a wonderful companion. It's something you can do alone and something you can do with others. The joy of making music is what I really try to emphasize and share. It's different from listening to it. You're actually doing it. It's a form of meditation. When I'm sitting on my drum pad, I do it every day and I just kind of can't wait to get to my drum pad. But I'll work on a double stroke roll, paradiddles, whatever, turn on the metronome, and you don't have to think. Instead of chanting or meditating and just sitting there, you're actually doing two things. You're meditating, you're calming your mind, you're opening it up to daydreaming and coming up like, oh, what's the next thing I want to do with my life or what, and so on. But you're not just sitting there, you're also developing a skill. So it's twofold. When I practice ukulele, I don't sit down and practice because I'm stuck at a piano practicing staring at a wall. Let's see, the Lion King. Lydia has a puzzle hanging on the wall in front of my piano that she made when she was a kid. I stare at that. So if I have an instrument like a guitar and ukulele, I walk around the yard and I'm doing two things. I'm practicing, I'm getting better, and I'm also exercising. So those are kinds of things that I like to share about, not so much specifically about music, but just life in general. that has really helped me and made, you know, made life fun and interesting.
Daniel offered some guidance for anyone who'd like to learn more about playing music.
You know, the ukulele, I think, is the easiest instrument to play and sing. Take with you everywhere, go on trips and teach kids because it's small. It's not like a guitar where you have to bar six strings and all of that. And the ekolu is one step. One big step easier.
Are you going to have the ekolu on stage when you're playing in the concert, or will you just be using the tiny tenor?
I'll be using the tiny tenor and piano. So I'm going to play Pule no Malia on piano as it is on the recording. And then I'm going to switch to ukulele for the other two. Yeah, wow. But any chance I get, I play the ekolu because it's easier.
And it sounds like you're having a total blast doing it too. Daniel, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Dot. I truly appreciate all the research that you did and the questions that you're asking. They're very inspiring to me.
You and I have been listening to six-time Grammy Award-winning musician, composer, arranger, producer, and educator Daniel Ho. Daniel and the hula troupe Halau Hula Kali'i O Nalani will be among the artists performing in the 65th annual LA County Holiday Celebration at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion on Christmas Eve. This is a free concert which starts at 3 o'clock that afternoon and runs until 6 p.m. that Tuesday, December 24th. Advance tickets are required for admission and are available at holidaycelebration.org. That's holidaycelebration.org. And if you can't travel to Los Angeles in person, you can still see the concert live streamed on PBS at pbssocal.org, or there's also an encore on Christmas night from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. And that concludes this edition of Noella File. Thank you for listening, and may your Christmas season be filled with great times with friends, exciting creative collaborations, and the sounds of joy.